Fine.
You're enjoying the echo, though, aren't you?
I was enjoying hearing the sound of my own voice.
Don't we all? Don't we all? That's why we do it.
Exactly. You know how many times I have to listen to these crappy podcasts?
Really? I've never listened to a single one of them.
Really?
Well, why should I? I lived through it. Like,
but I have to edit it and make sure that all the... I don't have like somebody doing this for me. You know what I mean?
I know. You were like Ed Wood, the Ed Wood of podcasting.
I am.
You know, one take, that's it. You put it up, we're not even worried about it.
That's it. That's it. You got it. You nailed it on the head. We're doing this old school guerrilla style. Well, okay. So this is Part-Time Fanboy. I'm Christian Horn. I'm here with Barry Negrin, our resident Doctor Who expert.
That's me.
That's you. And we are here to chat about the third segment of The Key to Time, The Stones of Blood. Dun, dun, dun. why don't we talk a little bit about The Key to Time, like in general, like where we are so far. So what has occurred up to this point before The Stones of Blood?
To roll back a little.
The
Doctor was summoned by this ethereal being called the White Guardian to try and collect the pieces, the six pieces of the Key to Time, which is a very powerful instrument designed to stop all time and enable the user to manipulate the cosmos. And the White Guardian had deliberately scattered the pieces to prevent it from falling into the wrong hands. However, now he actually needs to get it together so that he can put the universe back in balance a bit.
Yeah.
So he's already, the Doctor's already successfully found the first two pieces.
Yes.
One of which was an entire planet.
Yes.
Planet of Calufrax.
Yeah.
And then the previous one, what was it again? The first piece.
It was the Rybos operation. And
oh, yes.
It
was a massive piece of Jethrek.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Scrinchstone.
You are the right guy. I always say that when I have you on because I don't remember any of the terms of like what. I remember generally what happened like in the Rybos operation and the Pirate Planet. Those were the previous two installments. But the fact that you were just like Jethrek, blah, blah, blah. I'm very impressed.
This is not the first time I've seen it. I've seen these episodes probably, you know, three or four, maybe even five times time ago.
They
used to be on Maryland Public Television, and they would rerun them. So these aren't the first times I've seen them, but so having seen them now recently, you know, I also watched them yesterday.
Oh, did you watch all of them? Like Rivers and Pirate? Wow. So you watched the first three, like you watched them all the way through, like up to Stones of Blood? Or did you go past Stones of Blood?
No, I went through Stones of Blood to catch up to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, but I was thinking that you watched like the Rybos operation again and the Pirate Planet again. And
oh, what, this weekend?
Yeah.
No, that would be insane.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, wow, you are hardcore.
No, otherwise I wouldn't have forgotten Jethrek right off the top.
Yeah, I know. So at this point, this is the third chapter, and it's 3 out of 6, right?
Yes. Oh, and the most important part about this story is that they saddled him with a rookie sidekick.
Hello.
You know, who's quite attractive. She's a time lady herself.
Yes, she is.
She's quite young. She's only about, I think they said she was about 140.
Yeah.
and she's fresh out of the academy.
Romana.
It's really like a very, yes, Romana, short for Romana Dvorak-Trelundar.
Oh my God.
She is, it's like a very classic, you know, like cop buddy movie where you've got the grizzled veteran, the doctor, Cider, with this dumb rookie who doesn't know anything about the field but got top marks in the academy.
Yeah, good call. So basically we're looking at sort of like not the lethal weapon of, maybe the lethal weapon of the Doctor Who. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how many erstwhile, brand new, straight off the bench companions he's had, but
Well, a lot of them have been, fresh-faced humans who have no
sure.
freaking idea, who are not really helpful. There was this loudmouth Australian stewardess, Tegan, who is, and there was, he's had some savages over the years. He had an 18th century Scottish man.
Oh
So
I've read
he's
about
had
that.
some, Jamie. So he's had a lot of companions who've been relatively useless. But, Romana's pretty smart, so.
She is pretty smart, and I have to say that she's really growing on me. I mean, she started off as kind of like a wise ass, you
Yeah, very
know.
haughty.
Yeah, and it seems by now, at this third chapter, she's kind of mellowed out a little bit on that. Like, she's not so much of a like wisecracking, which to me is kind of like sad because I kind of liked her that way. I liked
But
her.
yes, but she still puts the doctor, in his place when needed. For example, when they have the first two pieces and he's fumbling to try and put them together, and she like snaps them together in a second, and she says, "Oh, I was always good at puzzles." And he says, "You would call this a puzzle?" And she says, "Well, not much of a puzzle."
I mean, she still gets a couple of quips in, but it seemed like when she very first showed up, in the Ribos operation, that she was definitely more sassy. You know what
Oh,
I mean?
yeah. Well, she was expecting to be treated as an equal, and it became clear to her that, the doctor was not nearly as much of a buffoon as his academic record and, felony record would actually lead him or her to believe, so.
So, I mean, this is the third installment, and I've really liked the first two. And the first two were, they were kind of, I mean, I don't know that you would call them like, say, swashbuckling adventure or whatever, but
Right.
there was a momentum to them. I gotta
Yes.
say, this one, this sucked. I was like blown away by, like, I expect a level of kind of like community theater to these, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But this one was just like, holy cow. I had a hard time getting through the Stones of Blood, Barry. It was a
It's
rough
funny
time.
because my notes on this indicate very similar feelings because a lot of the first half to two-thirds of it to me were very recycled, regurgitated shit from previous Doctor Who episodes. Like for example, a very common trope on Doctor Who is that there's some secret sect of old religious fanatics aiming to bring back some old god of days gone by. For example, the pyramids of Mars with Sutekh, the Egyptian god, was a better telling of the same story. Here, it's the Kaliach, a real life Celtic goddess. But there's some very weak ass stuff going on. Like episode one ends not just in any
Oh my
cliffhanger,
God.
in a literal cliffhanger. You
Well,
have
it's not even
Romana.
that it's just a cliffhanger. It's like, I mean, you find out in the second episode, but Romana's kind of like standing like in a field, and this is just, I think this is just like bad direction or limited direction because they were shooting outside, but she's like standing in a field and she turns around and she's like, "What?" And then the next second she's like falls off a cliff. And it's like, "Wait a minute." What if they made it look like she just basically stumbled off a cliff, you know? And
Yeah, but
you.
the implication later was that some being resembling the doctor pushed her.
So, I mean, yeah, this to me was, it's just funny because I was watching the first episode and, well, I mean, maybe we should just go back to the beginning a little bit. They're in the TARDIS. They're trying to put
Oh, and the opening segment starts off with the crappiest hand model of the TARDIS anyone has ever seen. I mean, You know, admittedly, the special effects weren't good
No.
in, you know, at this point, but these are like 1963 effects.
Well, that's what I've always, that's what these old Doctor Who's always remind me of, because quite honestly, they're being filmed like what, in like late 70s, mid to late 70s, and they're not even like up to par to like 66 Star Trek, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like,
It's sad.
holy cow. But I mean, at this point, you're right. They've got, you mentioned earlier, they have the two pieces of the key to time. They're kind of like messing around, like to fit them together, and then they hear something, right? Like they
Yes.
hear like a voice. What does the voice say again?
The disembodied voice says, "Beware, beware the Black Guardian, beware." Now, you know, the thing is that Romana, at this point, you know, thought that the president of Gallifrey had sent her on this mission because the White Guardian came to her in that image. So he didn't even know that this that she didn't even know that that wasn't even the president of Gallifrey, that it was the White Guardian. So at some point, he had to, the doctor had to tell her the real deal, that, okay, wasn't really the president. She's like, but I saw him with my own two eyes. Like, I don't know why, like, this would never occur to her, but apparently it didn't.
I mean, so, and basically they find out that they have to go to Earth, which Doctor Who is like very excited
Excited.
about.
Oh,
He's
yay.
like, yeah, we're going to Earth. And
And
she's
she's
like,
like, oh my
Earth?
God, everyone knows it's your favorite planet. I can't think of why for the life of me.
I know, right? So she gives him a little bit of a hard time about that. And they
Right.
basically, are on their way in the TARDIS
But that
to.
is a very, that's actually, that's sort of like a funny in joke, because, you know, here you've got this amazing time capsule, and that can travel through space and time, and most of the action of the show is so far set on Earth. You know, it's a joke because, of course, it's going to be set on Earth. The BBC can't afford to put them anywhere else. So everyone knows it's your favorite planet.
Well, it's funny. It's like this trope in a lot of science fiction, or like even comic books. Like I was reading some Marvel comics over the weekend, and you always come across this thing where like Earth is like the central crux of the universe. There's something important in evolution that's happening on Earth, and it's like, really? Like, out of the billions of aliens that you have in Marvel Comics or whatever, it's like Earth is like, I mean, maybe it's just the cynic in me, you know what I'm saying? But of course, Earth has to be the center of the universe or
Well, you
whatever,
know, it's
right?
like that old story about the guy who's looking for his keys under the lamppost, and then his friend says, you know, did you drop them around here? And he said, no, I dropped them, you know, down the street, but the light's better over here.
That's funny. Oh man. So anyway, they go to Earth. They basically end up in Earth. And where do they end up? I'm looking at the Wikipedia because the
Me
location
too.
kind of like escapes me.
It's in, you know, like
Cornwall, it says
something
here.
like that.
They find themselves near the Nine Travelers, a group of standing stones in the Boscombe Moor,
Because they couldn't
Cornwall.
afford, I'm sure they couldn't afford Stonehenge, surely.
Stonehenge, no. Which is, it's basically like a cheap ass Stonehenge
But
where
I'm
they
sure
end
there
up.
are, I mean, I'm no Anglo expert, but I'm sure there are multiple stone circles like, you know, like
Yeah, like
Stonehenge.
Stonehenge. Oh, sure. Wait, before we go any further, did you know that this was the 100th story of the series? Like,
I did not.
basically, and it says it on Wikipedia. It's the 100th
Yes.
story, and it was the fourth part of the show was aired during the 15th anniversary, which to me is like, wow, how anticlimactic can you get? That's like giving your wife a lump of coal for your 15th anniversary. It's horrible.
When in
It's
fact,
horrible.
15, I think, is actually something like plaster and paper,
Is
so
it
I
really?
don't
Well,
know.
that's basically what this ended up being, quite
But you know, I
honestly.
thought, but actually, I to be honest, I thought that episode four of all four of them was the best. But
Oh,
we'll get there.
that's quite honestly like saying like the dump I took this afternoon was better than the dump I took this morning. Because I almost fell asleep during the fourth episode. I was like, really? Wow. Yeah, oh, it just got so... No, maybe so... it was the third episode. I think the third episode...
the third was terrible.
The third episode, I think I... The fourth one kind of like got... But it was pretty bad. But anyway, okay. So the long and short of it is they land on Earth, and basically they're within this group of standing stones. And basically the doctor discovers that there's like this druidic like cult that's operating in the area, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And basically he lives in this giant hall in this house, and they are they committing human sacrifices? Is that what they're doing?
No, not yet.
Not yet. Not yet. And but they're getting to the point where they're starting to commit to that level, right?
Well, it always starts off with animals, and then
Yeah, it just always escalates. And basically, so the doctor goes to like kind of like investigate. And
well, he also stumbles upon these two archaeologists.
Oh my god.
Who are delightful. You know, this you know, the typical quirky old lady.
Oh my god, the old
professor,
lady.
Professor Amelia.
Yeah. That was rough. She was rough, man. Like I had a hard time with her. I mean, I know that basically, and so what, they're like surveyors, right? They're like hobbyists or like, what are they?
No, they're archaeologists.
Oh, they're like serious archaeologists.
She's written, Amelia Rumford has dedicated, you know, much of her career on these, you know, these type of Celtic stone circles and, you know, the druids and stuff like that.
That's
so she's
right,
an
Amelia.
Expert.
That's right. Okay, so she's an expert, and she's with her friend, what, Vivian?
Vivian Fay,
which is obviously sort of like Morgan Le Fay or something
sure,
like that.
Sure, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And they're basically, they're conducting a survey, or I don't know, they're just wandering around, it seemed like.
No, they're surveying the stones.
Yeah, they're surveying the stones, and they run into Doctor Who, and they kind of clue him in as to that there's some like crazy stuff going on, right?
Yeah, you should pop down to the manor down the road.
Yeah,
you know, that's
easy.
You know, the head of the druids is down there.
Yeah, exactly. And his name is DeVries or DeVries?
Something like that,
yeah. And basically, he heads over there, and while he's, like, going to question the guy, for some reason, the doctor, for some particular reason, this DeVries or DeVries guy gets, like, super excited. And
because the doctor is, you know, listed as, he thinks that he's the person of the prophecy, so we'll sacrifice him so that the Kaliach may return.
Now, how does he know that the doctor's part of the prophecy? Like, where did it say that? Because I missed that. you don't know either.
The ravens told him.
The ravens, oh my god. Yeah, see, that's where it sort of like gets a little bit convoluted. Like where it's sort of like, okay, Doctor Who shows up, and this guy who's in charge of like the local druidic sect is basically like, this guy, this is the one that we have to, you know, like sacrifice, and basically cold cocks the doctor like in the back of the head and knocks him out, which
right.
I think is the first time, or at least like in these older episodes, maybe I'm not, I haven't seen as many as you have, but the first time that he's been like knocked out like that.
Oh,
like,
it happens a lot, actually.
Does it really?
But usually he's, you know, in many cases he allows it to happen so that he can get deeper into the mechanisms of the evil people, so like he deliberately allows himself to get knocked out.
Yeah, he lets himself get knocked out, and then so they drag him over to cheap ass Stonehenge. And they're about to sacrifice him, and they've got robes and everything.
Oh yes,
like they're ready. And this is sort of at the same time that Romana's kind of fallen off the cliff at this point, because he left her behind, right?
He actually rescues her before then. He sends, of course, another sort of weak ass trope is that, you know, that we've actually seen recently where they use Canine as a dog. You know, of course it's Canine to the rescue. So he's, you know, sniffs out Romana's scent and tracks
her
down.
That's right. So she got knocked off the cliff, and canine tracks her down, right? And then they rescue her. He uses the scarf.
Of course he does.
To pull her. Now, would he use the scarf a lot like that?
Use it for lots of stuff, yeah.
Okay, okay. I mean, that's the first time I think I've ever seen him, like, actually. And she's like, no, don't pull me up, you know? Because
she's
like,
she thought he pushed him.
Yeah, she thought that she pushed him. So, and they're basically insinuating that what? Like, the Black Guardian was the one that did it, right?
No, I think that's kind of what I thought. Oh, I didn't think so at all.
No, what did you think?
I thought that it was Vivian Fay.
Oh, but she said she saw the doctor, and they mentioned that he could change.
She had the Great Seal of Diplos, so she had stolen the Great Seal of Diplos, and its powers, according to the Megara, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, we're getting ahead.
Are one of the powers of both the Great Seal of Diplos and the pieces to the Key to Time are transmutation. So. To me, it looks like the Vivian Fay concealed herself to pretend that she was the doctor, and then shoved her off the cliff.
Well, see, this is why I need you, because these episodes were, I swear, I was kind of like zoning out at one point.
I think also, to be honest, I bet you that if there was a director's cut of this, it would have made more sense.
Oh,
This feels to me like bad editing.
It also feels, and it felt very rushed too. I mean, it feels like one of the, least better produced of the ones that I've seen of the old episodes. Like another one that I really disliked that I saw before, you know, we even got to know each other, like on this podcast, was the Ark in Space or something.
I knew you were gonna say that,
and I hated that one. And that's what this reminded me of. Like, I was like, wow.
I think they even reused one of the dead aliens from the Ark in Space. When they cracked open the cells, one of the cells had that big bug in it.
Yeah.
And I thought that it was like the same bug as the Wirin who were on the Ark.
That's funny, because visually I was like, that looks familiar to me too.
Yeah.
But I, you know, gosh knows I've seen enough sci-fi. So anyway, Doctor Who rescues Romana, and then he goes to the thing, gets knocked out, he's on the stones, and he's about to be cut up by this guy, right?
Pretty much, yes.
And then the old lady shows up.
Scares off the creepy guys
in robes.
But they didn't want to get discovered.
No, so. But I mean, seriously, this feeble kind of older woman shows up, and she's like, "What's going on?" Blah, blah, blah. And they're like, run away, like Monty Python or something.
Yeah.
They're just like, so she basically rescues Doctor Who.
Pretty much, and then he starts, you know, rummaging around the house.
Yeah.
He figures out that they're placed under attack by some of the stones from the circle.
Yeah, well, that's what happens to the leader of the cult. And according to Wikipedia, that's his maid. I thought it was like his girlfriend or something. But
he was the maid, but she was also his right hand girl in the cult.
Gotcha. Because, you know, if you were going to have a right-hand member in your cult, who better than your maid, quite honestly?
You know, to be also, you know, how many extras do you want to pay for on this show?
It's true. But so they retreated back to the manor after they got, like, scared off. And basically what ends up happening is they get attacked by these, like, sentient pieces of Stonehenge or
right,
whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the doctor works out that they're these silicon life forms that need blood or globulin to survive. So there you go.
They're like vampires. Yeah.
No, it's true. A blood-drinking alien.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never heard of that before.
I know. Well, but I love the Amelia's reaction, where she's like, "Doctor!" It's almost like Katharine Hepburn. She's like, "I can't believe that there's silicon. What are you talking about?" Like it's really funny how Doctor Who starts talking about like stuff in space and aliens.
She takes it really in stride.
Yeah, I know. Well, not only that, but like he basically acts like, "Hey, like this is normal stuff, you know?" Like she's supposed to just know. And then she kind of acts like a little bit like, "What? Really? You're an alien?" And she's not like, blown away by this. She's not like, you're crazy. Like, this is all insane. She's basically like, yeah, okay, I'll go.
You know, I wonder how much of it is, you know, there was some evidence that she was clearly losing her memory. So I wonder how much of it was the character sort of like, A, keeping up a brave face.
Yeah.
B, she's a pretty tough old lady. Yeah. So she's like, okay, fine, I'll play along. And C, maybe she's even doubting her own sanity at this point. So she's like, okay, this may or may not really be happening, but let's see where it goes.
Honestly, I was beginning to doubt my own sanity. When he was like hanging out with that woman, I was like, what are you doing, man? Like, this is just crazy. So basically what they're rummaging through the house, right? And earlier in the episode, this DeVries cat had like a wall of like his relatives or something.
No,
like,
they were paintings of the former owners of this manor.
The former owners. Okay. And there were like three paintings missing.
Yes.
And Doctor Who and Amelia discover the paintings.
Yes,
and
in
like,
a priest hall.
Dun, dun, dun. And
they're
all
like from different centuries, but they're all clearly paintings of the same woman, and they're the same woman being Vivian Fay.
Yes, who is Amelia's friend, who was like the other surveyor who Doctor Who came across in the beginning.
Meanwhile, at that same time, Vivian Fay is like shoving Romana into the circle and then zaps her with a big stick. It's like a wand.
Oh,
and then
my
makes
God.
Her disappear at the end of episode.
Wait, you gotta go back a little, because like this sequence is not kind to Romana. And I can see why Mary Tam, by the end of this run, was like,
I'm out of here.
I'm done with this show. Because, okay, so they make her look like she's an idiot and she falls off a cliff. And she's basically like, Romana is basically like spying on the Stonehenge circle, like waiting to see if anybody turns up. And Vivian.
Like sneaks up behind her.
Sneaks up. No. Come on. She doesn't sneak up. She shows up right next to her. And she's like, Romana, what are you doing? And Romana's like, well, I'm keeping an eye on the circle. And then basically, like, she shoves her into the circle. And Romana's like, what are you doing? And then the reveal
you're
of like,
me.
Yeah, you're hurting. And then Vivian, the big reveal, she steps into the circle like really quickly, and she's wearing this like feathered like druid gown.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
We saw that before, because the maid was wearing it earlier.
Yeah. No, we saw it before, but you're telling me that you're standing in the woods and somebody comes up right next to you and addresses you and it's dressed up in that outfit.
And it doesn't dawn on you.
Yeah, I know, you're sort of like...
And like, actually, like when you saw Romana and Vivian just in the tight headshots, you could see the feathers sticking up on her shoulders. You're like, this isn't right. What the fuck is she wearing?
Exactly. Exactly. The only excuse I could give like Romana is that she's never been
dark.
To Earth. What's that? It was dark. It was dark, but that she's never been to Earth either. Like,
that's
she doesn't true. She doesn't know their customs. She doesn't know. But quite honestly, I was sitting there like, come on, Romana. You got to work with me here, because this is bullshit. Like, this is not working. So she shoves, like you said, Vivian shoves her into the circle and then zaps her with the wand. And
she disappears.
She disappears.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and you're like,
to be honest,
duh.
Though, to
yeah.
me. That's where the show got a lot more interesting.
Yeah, it did. No, honestly, at that point, I was like, some action. Because quite honestly, it had just been like kind of like bumbling around and didn't really seem to have a lot of focus, you know? Just like all the exposition and everything just was like, it was just like really badly written, like I think. I think, and you could be right that there was something with the editing, you know, but I also think that that for this being like the 15th anniversary, like episode, I was like, wow, you guys were not reaching for the stars on this, you know, like it was really bad. And then, and I also just quickly have to comment on Tom Baker's acting in this one. Like, I think that we've spoken about Tom Baker.
Listen, you're getting a little, I'm sensing that you're stepping on sacred ground here, so try carefully.
No, dude. You gotta give me this, because the thing with Tom Baker, and it could be that, you know, that they didn't have a lot of money and that things were like, you know, that they had to quickly get through stuff and you only had like one take or whatever. But there's one, I think that Tom Baker in a lot of these, to me, is very much the type of actor who knows, like, has memorized the script and knows where what he's supposed to do and doesn't necessarily listen to what the other actors are doing, because there's a couple of moments in this, specifically in this sequence, you know, four episodes, where, like, somebody says something and they're like,
and he just runs them over.
It's not even just that he runs him over. Like, I think it was in the second episode, Romana says something she discovers something, and she says it very calmly, and then he goes, "Of course, I can't believe it!" Like, he just flips out. Like he just yells, like, really loud. And I'm sorry if I just blew your earphones out.
That's quite all right.
But that's exactly what he does. He goes, "Unbelievable! I can't know." Like, it's just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He just had, like, a conniption. Like it's just like the, what she said, or the way that she said it, does not in any way deserve that level of, like...
Oh, yeah, but, you know, that's Tom Baker, though. Yeah. He's, like, very excited. You know, he has that...
No, but he goes from being, like, very calm to all of a sudden very excited. You know what I mean? Like I can't believe it.
He was the original... Hey, believe me, he was the original madman with a blue box. Trust me.
Oh, really?
You know, you think it's David Tennant. I hate to burst your bubble, honey. It was Tom Baker.
No, but at least David Tennant kind of, like, had a reason for getting, like, crazy. Like, you would just be like, I mean, it reminded me of my, like, daughter when she was 4 years old. And, like, you would be talking to her, and then all of a sudden, like, out of nowhere, you know how little kids are? They're like, "Oh my God, this is the most amazing thing!" And you're just like, "Whoa, whoa, what just happened? Like, chill out, it's okay." Like,
but I think also that, you know how, I don't know if you watch Sherlock at all.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I actually, while I was waiting for you to call, my soon-to-be 12-year-old has turned me on to Sherlock, and it's pretty great. Amazing. You know, it's written by Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss, the two big showrunners of the modern Doctor Who. Yeah. And Sherlock does the same thing, you know, as this Tom Baker doctor. He'll say, "Of course!" You know, like, when he has his epiphany, he has, like, a big splutter. So... this must be a common amongst super geniuses.
No, I think, well, that's the thing. And Sherlock, like, when he has, but I guess what I'm saying about this particular one, there were two times where somebody was just, like, talking to him in a normal tone, and he just went, like apeshit. And I was like, whoa, whoa. It wasn't that they were kind of, like, you know, discussing ideas, and he just was like all of a sudden the volume elevated. And I'm going to record, like, if I could go back and fast forward, I'm going to record like a bit of that video from Daily Motion, and I'm going to send it to you. And you'll have to agree with me that that's like, whoa, that's a little bit out of... anyway, I totally sidetracked, which is very much like what he did. I went off on a tangent, but at this point, so Romana gets transported, disintegrated. We don't know. And then how does the doctor find out? I can't remember.
Oh no, but Vivian Faye tells him flat out that if you stop interfering, she'll be fine.
Oh, okay. So she's basically holding her for ransom against the doctor.
Like, basically says, you know, actually, the doctor and Amelia show up at the Stone Circle. Miss Faye is there and says,
"Oh, that's right. You'll be safe." She's in the outfit.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, so before that, though, was this before or after that Canine gets fucked up? Like,
this is well after.
This is well after. So before then, Romana and the doctor were at the hall, and they discovered the bodies of this guy and his maid.
Right.
And then the silicon...
The ogre.
The ogre, yeah. You know, the Stonehenge creature show up to take them out, right?
And yes.
Canine, like,
kicking their asses, but
yeah.
he gets the crap beaten out of him.
He gets the crap beaten out of him. And quite honestly, like, not knowing the history of the show, I was like, dude, did they just take out Canine? I was a little worried. I got to admit, I was worried for the little guy.
Well, you got to remember, though, this is the second Canine. This is Mark II.
Oh, really?
Canine Mark I stayed behind with Leela on Gallifrey at the end of the last season, because Leela fell in love with the captain of the guard at the invasion of time. And Still, the canine Mark One stuck around to keep her safe.
Oh, so, okay. And so, canine, there's two. How many canines have there been?
At least three, if not four.
Oh, wow. Because the last time I saw canine, like, in, like, the current continuity, he was with Sarah Jane. Sarah Jane.
That was at least Jane canine show. Mark Three.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So, is it the same personality or, like, a different dog or...
Well,
so are there two canines out there, like four different canines with the same personality?
Well, I mean, he's a robot and you can build him. So
yeah.
I leave that to your imagination. Is Data the same as Lore? I don't know.
I don't like the next generation. Oh. but that kind of sucks because it kind of takes away his uniqueness for me. You're kind of bumming me out with that.
I don't think there are like 1,000 of them. I think there are like three.
Well, as long as he's not just like a Volkswagen, you know what I mean? Like you can just roll him off the like line and like everyone has one. Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Like, you know what K-9 kind of reminds me of? He's a cooler version of it. Is you ever watch the old Battlestar Galactica? And they have that boxy thing that the little boy has.
Oh, God.
Do you remember Boxy?
Yes.
Now, I think K-9 is much cooler, but K-9 is probably like 5 steps away from being a Boxy. Like, if there was an annoying little kid hanging around, like, K-9 could be Boxy, but he's not. Don't get offended. I'm just saying. Like,
I understand.
You could very easily veer off into Boxy territory, don't you think?
Well, except for the fact that he can shoot a laser from his nose.
Exactly.
And that he has a supercomputer for a brain.
Exactly.
Although, I think one of the funniest scenes... I think some of the best scenes of this show were when, with K-9 and the Doctor, when they're arguing over the hyperspace zappy thingy. So, they obviously, Vivian Fay zaps herself to hyperspace, and the Doctor has to figure out how to get her back. So he gets K-9 to help calculate how they can build this wild contraption, which is enabled to basically a hyperspace projector, which enables him to zap himself to hyperspace and go after K-9.
Romana.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, so they go to hyperspace, and at this point, I'm like, whoa, this episode just like, what happened? Like, we just went, like, I wasn't expecting that. Like, I was expecting, like, Earth and fighting aliens on Earth. And then all of a sudden, they get zapped to what? Like, a prison ship or something?
A ship, yeah.
Which is where I got really confused. Let me tell you the honest truth.
This is where the episode started to make sense.
That's so great. Well, but what makes sense about it? Okay, so you're going to have to explain it to me because maybe I was tired or whatever. They show up on the ship, and I thought the ship was Vivian's ship.
Well, in a way it was.
She took it over?
Yes, she was a prisoner on the ship.
She was a prisoner. Okay, that's what I thought. And then she took it over, and she put the two beings that were in charge of the ship in a cell.
No.
Right? No?
Those were justice machines.
Yes, justice machines.
Justice machines were not policemen. The justice machines, these little sparkly lights.
Yes.
Man, the BBC can really do a lot. Nothing budget.
I actually like those guys for some reason.
They were awesome.
Yeah, something about them remind me of, what was that? Did you ever see Automan? Like Cubit or something? Like he used to have, remember that old 80s show? It was on for like less than a season.
No.
And he had like... Cursor, I think he called it, and it was this floating thing. Wow, okay, I'm old. Anyway.
Oh, yes. He was like a cop that got like killed but came back to life as Tron.
Yeah, he was like Tron. Yeah. He had the Tron sort of, and he had like a little thing that went around and it was like bloop, bloop, and it was called Cursor.
Yes.
It was like a little cube, and it was, wow.
Yes, and I do remember this.
Yeah.
His partner, like the dead cop's former partner who's a human, you know, would still ride around in this guy's light car, except for the fact that the light car could make these inertialess 90-degree turns,
just
which
like
would
John.
Always slap the human guy right up against the window.
Yeah.
People can't make inertialess turns.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that. Yeah. But that's what it reminded me of course, you know, whatever. Obviously, one having not to do anything with the other.
No, but, Doctor Who, this episode came, this is in 1978.
Way before.
But two, three years earlier.
Yeah. So they're on the prison ship and
she didn't She didn't lock them in. They were
No.
justice machines. They were supposed to deal with the prisoners when they arrived where they were going.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
the policemen on the ship, the security guards who were supposed to deal with the prisoners while they were on the ship, you know, Vivian killed them.
Okay. Okay. And so, but these justice machines are what? Like, they basically, Doctor Who and Romana discover these two, like, little light floating cursor things that claim that they are the judge, jury, and executioner of the ship?
For the prisoners.
Okay. And they basically say that, you know, that's where I get confused. How does the chain of authority work on this ship? Like, they were locked in a cell, and then Doctor Who lets, and Romana lets them out,
they weren't
and
locked
they're
in.
all pissed off
They
about
were,
it.
because they weren't supposed to be released by anyone without authorization.
So they were in the cell because they were supposed to be in the cell? Not
it,
because...
Yes. It's not a, it wasn't a cell, per se, that was there... cabin or their repository.
Okay. See, that's where I get confused because I was like, prison ship? Did Vivian put them in the prison and now they're ticked off at Doctor
nope.
Who?
Nope.
So
they were mad. In fact, the reason why the doctor opened their cell is because they had a very special looking seal on it. And, you know, he figured, well, maybe this is like a serious, you know, maybe this is Vivian's cell. Maybe this is somebody even more serious than Vivian's cell. It's a big funky seal that looked different from everybody else's. I better open it and see what's inside.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. But meanwhile, back on Earth, K-9 and Amelia, the older woman,
yes.
the projector thing gets blown up, right?
By Vivian, yes.
By Vivian, yeah. So the
Who
thing
comes,
is...
Who's now... no longer dressed as a bird. Now she's
yeah.
in full-on space gear.
Full-on.
Her skin is silver.
Yes, full-on, like, Tin Man. Yeah, she's, like, got the silver makeup and
yep.
a nice flowing gown. And
she's got the big bustier.
Yeah, she looked pretty cool, I thought.
Yeah.
Like as far as, like, an alien, you know, was concerned. And she was kind of creepy. So then, so she broke the projector. And then she, K-9's like, don't worry about it. We can fix it. And then there's a line that I thought was kind of like a call out to Star Trek. Did you catch that?
What did they say?
Well, where K-9, she's repairing the thing or like she's, K-9's like, we can repair it. And she's like, I can't repair this. She's like, I'm an archaeologist, not an engineer.
Oh.
Like, I kind of was like, was that a call out to Star Trek?
It might have been.
Yeah, I was like, oh, because she very much said it like, you know, stern. And
damn it,
like,
Jim.
Yeah, 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 yeah. She was like, I'm an archaeologist, not a... So basically, K-9's like, we can repair it. And so they get to repairing the projection device. Meanwhile, Doctor Who is sort of like arguing for his life on the...
because the Magar are very pissed off with him because he broke the seal and let them out without authorization. The the penalty for which, of course, is death.
Is death, of course. There's no middle ground.
No.
Yeah, yeah. So Doctor Who has
it's clearly
to
a it's a Republican administration.
Exactly. And so Doctor Who has to put on a wig. And
which he has in his pocket.
I know. And he has to represent himself in this court.
Yes.
And in the meantime, Vivian decides that she's going to hang out and watch this trial, right?
Well, no. First, she starts to have the Ogre try and kill them all, but the Megara blow up one of the Ogre. So that makes
right.
the other one back off. And she's like, okay, I'm not in charge here after all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right, you're right. Yeah, that's right. The two little wisps of light.
Are not to be trifled with.
Yeah, not to be messed with. They're badasses. They're badasses.
Right.
So what ends up happening... is and the, I don't know him with the wig on and all that I kind of checked out at that
oh,
point.
Oh come on,
where...
there was so much work. There was so much stupider stuff before then. Like,
there was,
me,
but
like,
I guess I
to
got
me,
to the.
The dumbest moment of the entire show was when, where was it? It was in the middle of episode 3, when one of the Ogre is chasing them, and he takes his scarf off. And he pretends to be a matador. And even the incidental
oh my
music
God.
Goes into like the Spanish bullfighting music.
It was
and
like
he jumps out of the way and the thing falls off the cliff.
That's right. Oh my God.
That was so weak.
It was...
And you know, I love this show to death,
I
but I'm
know.
like, Jesus Christ.
I was like, am I watching this right now? It was, oh man. Yeah, I think just by the point, like Tom Baker puts on the wig, and you know, you've got the two floating wisps and the chick in the silver makeup. You know, I was very much like, okay, I've had enough. I really like, there's a limit to what I can take. And I was sort of just like, I mean, okay, so Doctor Who, basically what he's trying to do by other than surviving, is he's trying to trick Vivian into
Revealing that
revealing that,
she's actually this 4,000-year-old Diplosian prisoner who was,
exactly.
who stole the Great Seal of Diplos. She kidnapped a couple of Ogri. She's basically a war criminal, or like, some sort of serial killer. She's a bad. She's like the FBI's most wanted on Diplos.
Yeah, exactly. And meanwhile, Romana figures out a way to get back, right?
Yes, because the because Canine and
They got the
and old man
projector.
Amanda fixed the
Amelia.
projector. Amelia,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Fix the projector. She zaps. She comes back. She brings an ogre with her.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, so Romana's kind of going, and they're trying to figure out Doctor Who does some serious legal flim-flam
Yeah, well,
and
I mean, to
basically.
me, like, that's the best part, is that, this is yet another distinction between Classic Who and New Who. No
Oh.
Sonic screwdriver ballsing around. In fact, he didn't even use his Sonic to get into their the Megara's cell. He just broke the seal with his hand.
That's right.
And at the end here, there's no shouting, no running, no exploding, not even any special
They
effects.
didn't have the effects for it. They didn't have the budget for it,
He just
Barry.
it was just purely oratory and trickery. He basically
Oratory. Okay, go on.
He tricked the Megara into scanning the memory of Vivian Fay so that they would realize she's not Vivian Fay. She's this 4,000-year-old psycho bitch who's been on the lam for, 4 millennia.
Yeah, and who killed everyone on the ship
Yes.
and took it as her own, and basically, yeah, and so they discovered that she's guilty of all these crimes, and basically, instead of Doctor Who having to handle it, he basically lets them take over, which, I mean, they were going to kill him, so
Sure.
yeah, so he's like, all right, take over, and then they don't really show her getting like destroyed or exterminated,
No,
right?
her. Well, they do. There, but she didn't. Her sentence was not death. Hers was
Oh,
eternal imprisonment.
that's right,
So
that's
they
right. Yeah,
encased her in
right.
stone. So she became one of the new stones in the Stone
Yes,
Circle.
that's right. So she becomes like one of the Stonehenge stones, not a sentient one, but they imprison her for like 1500 years or
No,
something, right?
forever and permanently.
Oh, forever. I thought they said 1500 years,
No,
'cause
for
like,
one of the
oh.
crimes it was 1500. For the second crime, it was eternal, and they'll run concurrently.
So basically, and then Doctor Who,
It's
Amelia.
life plus 1500.
So basically, Doctor Who gets brought back by K-9 and Amelia, his new pal. And, they have this little chat like towards the end of the episode where she's like, oh, the surveyors are going to go crazy or something like that. There's a
Yes.
new stone. Oh, they'll be. What I forget what expression she uses. They'll be like chatting like pigeons or something. Like
Something like that.
she makes some kind of comment, and I was just like, oh man. I by the end of this series, I was just like, oh my God, I can't take that woman anymore. I was praying that she was not gonna stick around for the next episode. Like I was just like, oh man. There was just something about her that I don't know. I don't know. It just drove me nuts, you know?
Oh, I thought she was cute.
She was, yeah, no. After a while. So basically, what they reveal is that
She, by the
basically.
way, to me, she was like the proto Wilfred Mott. Your cute little old person that the doctor cottons to, because of their local, age and wisdom. Of course, he's like 10 times older than she is, but, he's been an archaeologist and he's pretty old.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I just, her performance was just like, oh, wow, it was rough. I was just like, I couldn't deal with it. But I mean, so by the end of this episode, basically they discovered that the key to time was a necklace that Vivian was wearing.
I think that was the Great Seal of Diplos.
That was the Great Seal of Diplos?
Because I think
at the end they put the necklace on the thing and it turns into a key, a piece of the key to time.
Yes.
Oh, so that was the device that she stole. I see what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah. To me, it just looked like a necklace. You know what I mean? I was just like, okay, that's the necklace. Okay, so that was the thing that she stole that kind of got her into trouble in the first place.
According to Wikipedia, I was right. The cells on the ship did contain a dead Wirin.
No way, really?
Yes.
That's hysterical. So, I mean, basically at this point, you know, they got the third piece of the key to time.
They're halfway there. I love the fact that they're storing them on the TARDIS in an old icebox.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I mean, and they basically put them together and, you know, you're off to the next adventure. Let me say, a piece that I really, you know, that I really liked about this, just to backtrack a little bit,
sure,
is I dig the whole, like, as ridiculous as this sounds coming from a heterosexual man, I dig the whole, like, Romana, like, fashion show sort of in the beginning where she's like, let me try this on. And then she puts, like, the cute hat on and she's got the shoes. And
she's
I'm like,
so cute.
She's really cute.
She's adorable.
She's really cute. But I do miss the old original feather, like, and the white gown, the sort of, like, space Ice Empress sort of thing that she was introduced with. But I mean, like I definitely was like, oh, are we trying to attract, we're trying to attract some female viewers here with Romana. You know, she comes out with the little cute hat and her hair's all put up in the,
oh, I don't
you
think
know,
so at all. I
no?
think they were just playing to the, you know, he often has a cute female companion. So they were just putting her in some, you know, new outfits. I thought she looked adorable in the Burberry hat, actually.
Yeah. No, she looked great. Like, honestly, like, I'm like, the further we go on in the series, the more attractive she becomes to me, which is I'm like wow, you know, I guess I never really, you know,
because she's also getting less bitchy.
That's true too, you know. She's become a little bit less of a pain in the ass, you know.
Yes,
you know, but I don't know, it seems to me like they were going for something interesting there, something that I hadn't seen, like, in the older Doctor Who, where she was just coming out and being like, is this outfit okay? And, you know, she comes out with those shoes and
let me tell you something.
She's like,
if anything, that is a premonition for the first episode of the next season, which I don't want to spoil for you since you haven't seen it yet.
No.
You look out for the first appearance of Romana 2. So
I'm going to miss this Romana, I'll tell you that, because I really think, and obviously the actress herself has passed away, which is kind of really sad.
Yeah, but she was only in her 60s, I think.
Yeah. But honestly, I guess I just haven't had a lot of exposure to the old Doctor Who's and sat and watched, like, I mean, is this like one of the first ones where they were like, we're going to do like six, like, interlocked, like, seasons? Is that, or did they do that a lot where things were interlocked, or was it just like one series and then they would just jump on to another?
I don't, well, there was always continuity usually from episode to episode, but not
this
much. They usually, as far as I can recall, they didn't use, well, that's not true. They mostly didn't have full season long storylines, but you know, they certainly did sometimes. Like for John Pertwee, there was an entire season when the Time Lords of Gallifrey took his TARDIS away and stranded him on Earth as punishment for something. So he spent his entire season on Earth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Without the TARDIS.
Holy well, he God. Like tried to, you know, well, he had it, but they disabled it.
Oh, I see.
There was one episode where he tried to jury rig it to jump anyway, and he knocked himself into a parallel Earth. You know,
wow,
it was classic
awesome
stuff, like with the Brigadier that had an eye patch. Everyone was mean and asshole-ish.
So Star Trek, basically mirror, mirror.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. I got to catch up on some of those. Like, here's the thing is, you know, as much shit as I give some of these episodes, as particularly this series, The Stones of Blood. I have to say, there's something about him that I do find really charming and endearing, and you know, and worth my time. You know what I'm saying?
And
for the most part, you know, they are sort. This one I did not watch with my daughter, just because the only place that you can apparently watch them online is this Daily Motion website. You know, they don't have them on Netflix for some reason. They don't even have them on Amazon Prime.
Really?
Yeah, they have like a ton of other stuff, but they don't have the Stones of Blood, which I don't understand why, but
it's stupid because they do have part four, the Androids of Terra on next. Yeah. They have that
which
on Netflix.
Sounds like an awesome. I just like the title of that, the Androids of Terra. Like is that better than the Stones of Blood?
Only time will tell.
Oh no.
Well, let's say if you like Mary Tam, there's a lot of Mary Tam in this one.
Oh, really? Why is that? Does he step out for a little bit?
Well, no, but I don't want to spoil it.
Oh, don't spoil it. Oh, then we're going to
You'll have to tune in to Part-Time Fanboy in about a month.
Yeah, I know. I guess you will. No, that's terrific. And, dude, we're like about, what, a month and a half away from, like, what's his face? The new Doctor Who, right?
No, we're like a month. It's August 23rd, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, a month. Holy cow.
It's like a
cow.
Month and 2 days.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. That's going to be great. You saw the most recent trailer, right?
Not only did I see it and enjoyed it, but I saw, I don't know if you've seen, some fan created the same, he recreated the season 8 trailer as if it were 1974 with Tom Baker as the new Doctor.
No way.
I'll send you a link after we get off the phone.
Oh, definitely send
that
to me.
Because it was brilliant. It was
dead.
Really? Yes.
Oh, you got to send that to me, and I'll post it on the site when the podcast goes up. That's terrific.
It was good. And the interesting thing, I'm hoping they're doing a Doctor Who world tour where Peter Capaldi, Stephen Moffat, and the lady who plays Clara, I can't remember, Jenna Louise Coleman.
Yeah.
They're going to 5 cities around the world, and New York is one of them.
Ooh.
They're going to be in town August 14th. I'm hoping that they're going to be at the Ziegfeld Theater the way they were the last time they showed up, because it's a block from my office and it's relatively easy to get tickets for me, I hope.
Oh, that's great. Good for you.
As I saw, I took my brother, my daughter, and a random internet stranger, which is a very long story, they gave out tickets to see the season 7 premiere with Matt Smith. They showed Asylum of the Daleks, and they had Matt Smith and Karen Gillan and Stephen Moffat, but one of the other, you know, producers was there, and it was fantastic.
That's great.
It was good. So I'm hoping to be able to catch it again.
I'm going to Comic-Con for Saturday and Sunday next weekend.
Nice.
And they usually have like a Doctor Who panel. It's gotten really hard to get into, although like for two years, like right before, say, Doctor Who kind of exploded in the U.S., like I saw David Tennant there. And
don't they announce the guests in advance or no?
They do. They do. But I can't remember if David Tennant was a surprise or I wasn't paying attention to the schedule. I just knew that there was a Doctor Who panel and I got in.
Yeah.
And you know, I saw Russell Davies there. I saw, you know, David Tennant there. And I think I saw one year where it was Karen Gillan and Matt Smith. But they are harder and harder to get into. But if there is one, like on, because usually they do them on Sunday. I'm going to try and I'll wait online for that if I can, unless like it gets crazy. But they tend to release stuff online too, like, you know, some of the panels. So,
sure.
You know, it's cool to be there in person. I mean, I was in one of the ones where it was Tennant's last year. And it was just awesome. He was like a rock star. It was just like crazy.
Sure.
Yeah. It was just
crazy. You and all the other fangirls.
You keep giving me a hard time about Tennant, but I love me some Tennant. He's awesome. I love that guy.
You know,
I love that guy.
I think he did a fine job. I will not deny that. But
he doesn't have the acting skills of Tom Baker.
You know, no, he's a fine actor. I mean, you know, this is Barty Crouch we're talking about.
Oh,
Junior.
Man. Yeah. Well, he's got a new show coming on Fox. I can't wait to see that. So
really, what?
Yeah, it's based on a series. called, it was based on a series that he did in the UK, and the US is doing a version. It's going to be on Fox.
Was it Broadchurch?
Something like that. Yeah. Broadchurch, I think, was the British show. You know, this is the American version. And, Broadchurch remake for Fox. It's called Grace Point. And it's also co-starring the wife from Breaking Bad. So that's probably going to be badass.
Sure.
I just think David Tennant's a really good actor, and, you know, whatever. I like, you know, I'm totally like, I'm going to watch that show. Hopefully it'll be good. You know, what are you going to do?
Right.
But anyway, you know, do you have any final thoughts on the Stones of Blood?
Well, we suffered through it.
So you admit it's not the greatest.
You know, I was actually, it's funny too, because I was rewatching it recently, and I'm watching the first couple. I'm like, oh my God, I don't remember it being this bad.
Really?
But it wasn't, I didn't hate it. I was like, yeah, this is definitely not the Pirate Planet.
You know, no, definitely not.
It took a little dip in quality.
I know that you told me, and I don't want you to tell me which one, you told me that one of the segments of The Key to Time sucked, which surprised me. Because
do you want me to tell you again?
Or? No, don't tell me.
It wasn't this one.
And you said, oh, wow, really? You said you wanted to skip it. And I was like, no, we're not skipping it. We're doing this. We're doing the whole thing. If we're going to do it, we're going to commit to it. We're going to suffer through it together.
You know, it's so funny, too, because, like, through about midway through the first or second episode of Stones of Blood, I was debating emailing you and saying, are you sure you want to do the whole thing?
No, we're going to do it. We're going to do the whole thing. God damn it.
Andrew's Tower is definitely better. And the last one, to me, was the best of all of them.
Oh, okay. Well, see, Mary Tam, for me, is just an excuse to watch it. I could just sit and look at her for, like, you know, whatever, four episodes. You know what I mean? I just wish that they made her quite kind of smarter. Because I'm like, wow, she does not come across that smart.
She's very naive. That's the thing. She's smart. She has no street smart at all.
Yeah. I mean, I could see why she left the series, like, right after this. Because, you know, honestly, she started out, you know, kind of having a little, you know, a little bit of a backbone. And at this point, she's kind of just following him around and, like, falling into dumb traps and, like, a little bit of the damsel in distress, you know what I mean? And that's not challenging for any actress, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, so the next one will be The Androids of Tara, correct?
That's correct.
And I'm actually, I don't know, the title sounds badass to me, but from your reaction, I'm getting this vibe of, like, don't get too excited.
No, it's good. It's definitely a step up.
All I know is that when I would search sometimes, like, on Netflix, like, a couple years ago, like, for Doctor Who, Androids of Tara was, like, always up there for some reason, like, at the top of the search. So it must be famous or, like, well-known or something, right? I mean, there must be something to it, right?
You'll see.
I guess we'll find out. All right. Well, this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy, and I have been joined by my pal Barry Negrin, and this is Christian Horn, and we are going to keep watching The Key to Time, damn it.
If it kills
everyone
us.
Everyone out there, if it kills us, I do not care. Thank you for listening to this episode, and hopefully you will listen to the rest of them. Bye now.
Take care.
Part-Time Fanboy.